Log. Okay? You got that? What's that word? Log. Okay? Someone asked, okay, now in counseling, sometimes people have an apprehension to counsel because they're saying to themselves, wait a minute, I have a log in my own eye. Who am I to go to talk to this person about what perhaps they need to consider? So people can be reserved. Here, this is what you have to realize. And I sort of the answer was like this, because I asked, well, someone asked me in person, and I also got either a text or email to that effect as well. No one has arrived. Let's just get back to the basics. No one has arrived. So if we're all waiting for every log to be out of our eye, no one's going to counsel anyone. Now, with that said, here is the thing that will distinguish the person that should be counseling and maybe shouldn't. I realize that there is an area where I do have a log in my eye. I realize it, and I'm striving to change that. Therefore, I think you are still prepared, equipped to counsel someone. As opposed to, I know I have a log, but I don't want anyone to know, and I'm not going to tell anyone about it, and I'm going to keep it hidden. Then that's hypocrisy. And so you should not be counseling someone. So that's between now you and the Lord, knowing that. What about, the question was asked as well, what about if we have similar issues? How can I possibly counsel someone else and my issue is similar to theirs? Shouldn't it be a person? Say, for instance, if we talked about that grid and there was anger, and shouldn't a person who is extremely patient talk to the person who has the anger issue? No, not necessarily. Because what can happen as well in that, if both are striving, they can both be accountable to each other about this issue. And both discover some of the same resources about the particular issue. And they can strive together with the issue itself. So that's a part of it when it comes to the log itself. We can't wait to have everything in our life corrected before we start counseling other people. It's about, I'll say it this way, it's about the direction of our life. What is our direction? And if our direction is striving towards Christ's likeness, then we should all be engaged in counseling one another. Now, understand that someone may have that apprehension. How can I do it when this is also true in my life? Now, a person that is really, really struggling with an issue. I mean, they're defeated right now. And sometimes that can happen. They are defeated. Then in that particular issue, they need help from someone else that is not defeated in it. Two people defeated in it should not be with one another. Two people striving together can be with one another, and iron does what? It should sharpen one another in that area. So we should be careful that we say to ourselves, how can I do it? Because I have my own issues. Even in the time with the men last night, we talked about how the body of Christ can complement one another. There may be a person in one area, say for instance, their log is pretty big in this area, but in another area of their grid, it's pretty tight. So in that area where their grid is pretty tight, provide that counsel to someone. In the area where your grid is, there's too much open space, then you receive counsel in that area in your own life. It's how that should work. So that makes sense? Any questions about that, sort of the log that's involved? Okay, here's that next word. This is going to start us off, and the word is gender. Gender. What about counseling when it comes to the opposite gender? How far do I go? How much could I possibly probe when it comes to counseling someone that's the opposite gender? What should that look like? Well, obviously, there should be some guidelines that are involved. When it comes to male to female, there are just certain things that are off limits. I don't think, and I've had even recent to address this with someone that I know and say, you should never have that conversation with a young lady again. It is not appropriate. Although you have some training to provide counsel, but never that category with a woman. That is a man and a woman that is discussing sexual sin, purity, thought life when it comes to the area. That is inappropriate, I believe. That person may come to you because they see you as a leader, then you direct them to another woman that's in the body of Christ. Now, say, for instance, a young lady comes to a man, and it's just about her faith, you know, trusting the Lord. Yeah, by all means, encourage your sister in the faith. But even as you may probe a little bit more, you discover other things, I think it's always best that it's woman to woman that is offering that counseling. Because maybe even in your probing, you may discover other things that's causing the distrust that a woman should address with that woman. But remember, when we talked about counseling, it can happen on various levels. It may be after this church service on a given Sunday, and someone just approaches you and says, boy, I'm really just struggling a little bit. I'm faced with a lot of trials in life, and I need a better perspective. And right then, you just encourage them in their faith in that moment. There's counseling that's taking place that may not even require follow-up, if you will, but you just encourage that person in their faith in that moment. So there should be guidelines when it comes to gender. I think that category, men to women, anything that is sexual, off limits. It shouldn't be discussed. Direct them to another woman in that area, okay? And there was another part to that question. Any questions about what I just said in that? And steps should always be taken. There's certain steps that I take, even as a pastor, that situations I won't find myself in. When it comes to counseling a woman, there may be times I will assess it initially, and even in my assessment of initially, my other leaders need to know about it. Then I've assessed it now, let me direct her somewhere else. And then what I would do is maybe bring in another woman that can be a part of the counseling that's hearing me counsel with her. She's there, so it's the three of us. Maybe it's been in the past, it's been a deaconess that's sitting in with me as I counsel this woman on a particular issue. And because even in that, she needs to have a woman's perspective on something. Although I may have a background with counseling, but still a woman's perspective is going to be helpful on the issue. Okay? Here's a question, and I'll just read the question itself. I thought it was really good. It seems appropriate for a counselor to tell a counselee to come back when they're ready to do their homework. Remember, we talked about that, doing your homework. And then it says, if they have a formal relationship, and the part is still part of the sentence. So come back when they're ready to do their homework if they have a formal relationship. But when it's a friend who repeatedly vents to you about a certain issue but doesn't seem to be receptive to counsel or anything you suggest, what do you say to them? So really what they're saying now is, okay, is there some distinction? How do we handle something that is, they say, formal, right? Versus obviously they say informal, okay? What happens? I wouldn't distinguish those two. If there is a person that, say, informally, they're coming to you and they have a particular issue, there's still homework you have to give this person, which is essentially because if they're constantly venting about a particular issue, there still has to be something in their grid has to change, something in their perspective has to change. Yes, they're not meeting with you every Tuesday at 7 o'clock after a care group, but nonetheless, they're coming to you for some counsel. And I would say if they are coming to you for counsel, you will know it when you ask them to respond a certain way. And if they don't respond properly, you know that this just is venting. That happens a lot. There are people that have come to me and they have a particular issue with something and they come and express it to me and it's generally negative. And I'll say, first, here's the first thing that often happens. Have you gone to that other person, if a person is involved? And it's always going to be a person involved, because even if they're venting about a situation, there is a person behind the situation. It could be something that they are complaining about that's in the church itself. Well, there's still a person attached to that situation in the church. Have you talked to that person? Because one thing that I found is violated so much in the church is not going to people directly. And that really is unacceptable. It's probably been one of the most frustrating things I have experienced in ministry is when people don't go to someone else directly and talk with them. And so what they will do is they go to someone else, whether it be formally or informally, and they will vent. So often the homework for me would be, even if it's in this sort of relationship that's here, have you talked to the person? Then if they come to me again, why did you not talk to the person? I didn't feel led. Oh, really? Led? What do you mean led? What does led mean? No. Really? And I've heard that before. Like, led? Let me explain to you led. Led means that I am following a biblical course. Whether or not you felt led or not is not the issue. Whether or not should you be led is the issue. So can you deny that the Bible would tell us to go to our brother or sister if we have an issue? No, I can't deny that. Then why have you not gone to your brother or sisters to whom you have an issue? Well, because. Then I'm not sure if I can, I can't interact with you anymore on this issue. Because now I'm violating a biblical principle by participating in your violation of something. And I can't be drawn into that. Now, when you, if you, maybe you need someone to go with you. Maybe perhaps I can go with you because you're wondering how you might express yourself, or maybe you're intimidated by that person perhaps. And that's happened before. Maybe it's another leader. The person's uncomfortable. They're not sure if they can get it out. They seem to, every time they talk to them, it doesn't come out the right way. Maybe I'll go with you. Or maybe someone else that knows you can go with you to talk to this person, but you can't come to me again unless you've gone to them and addressed it. So in that sense, I would say you would have to cut off that interaction until they've taken the proper steps. Because it's not really seeking a solution. If you want a solution, then you have to follow biblical steps. If you want to vent, and people at times do, I understand that, I get that, I know it happens. If you simply want to vent, I cannot be the person that's going to receive that. Okay? And here's the other thing. I don't necessarily know that everything you're saying is true. And sometimes, and you should understand this, sometimes people will say something that's not true, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they're just lying. How many times have you heard something and retold it, and you retold it, and it wasn't accurate, right? It happens. Or you have a perspective on something. Someone sees something happen, and you can have four or five perspectives on the same event. That happens. I understand that. So that's why we have to start at this point right here. And how many times throughout my ministry life have I been in a situation and then we get the other person involved and it's like, oh, wow, so that's what really happened. I am so glad that I didn't draw my final conclusion before I found out. It's like the proverb that says, you know, well, he who answers before he has listened, it's a shame and a folly. Because you've given an answer already and you haven't properly assessed the situation. Okay, that was another question that came up. Any questions about that, what I just stated at all? That's a good question. Let me go to my, actually it was a text. Let me go to that one. Okay. Yes. Sure.
I was wondering if there's a time in which that individual that comes to me is struggling, but at the same time, acting sinfully, would it automatically move to like a man-made situation at that point? And how do we deal with that?
If we're talking about the person that's coming and venting to you, and whether or not now, when does it, perhaps the question is, when does it turn into gossip? Then if it becomes gossip, when is that addressed, the sinfulness of their gossip address? Yeah. I would say that first, their willingness or lack of willingness to go to that person is going to determine that. And if they, then I would ask them, Because what may happen is this: once you present that to them, they may stop coming to you, but that doesn't mean they won't stop going, period. They'll find someone else, right? And sometimes what can happen, even in church life, here's the reality of it, is that misery can love company. So they'll find someone else that will, yes, I know, I understand. I feel the same way about it. I was wondering if there was anyone else that saw it the way that I saw it. And then all of a sudden, it's a cancer that can start to brew. So then there has to be a follow-up with that person that says, okay, I notice, has the issue been resolved? Because you haven't talked with me about that before. So I assume that it's resolved. Well, no, it isn't resolved. Okay, so did you go to that person? No, I didn't. Well, let me ask you a question. Have you talked with anyone else about this issue? Well, yeah, I have. Then what does that make what you're doing? Then I believe then it, now it's gossip. Then if that's gossip, what does the Bible say about that? How should that be addressed? And allow them to answer that question. Unless they just want to justify it, but it can't be justified. Yes. Would it remain true among spouses? In what way? Fill that in a little bit. Okay, you know, that's a good question, because one may think, okay, it's my spouse, it's in our home, it's not going anywhere else, but the same principle is true. Because then what you're doing is you're corrupting the ears of your spouse. And you're involving them in something that's unacceptable. Now, a person genuinely may go to a spouse to say, hey, there should be a checkpoint with your spouse to say, am I thinking correctly about this? Here's a situation that I have noticed, that I've seen. Am I thinking correctly? And even that spouse should be a person that can say, you need to go to that person and talk with them about it. Okay, now that I've heard you, and maybe that's a good recourse, instead of going to someone else, to your spouse, to say, now, what should I do about it? And I even believe in going to your spouse, that initially when you do it, be as general as possible, and definitely be nameless. That is, it shouldn't be, yes, when Jill did such and such, and this happened, this happened to me in church. Here's the situation. It's a real situation, not a hypothetical. It's real, but I'm not giving you any names. And even my Joanna, me being the pastor of the church, this situation, she'll come and ask me, hey, I need some help on this. And she will at times, you know, be nameless on it, because I don't necessarily need to know what is happening in that person. I don't need to know all of those details. Now, there comes a point where at times I will say, you know what, I've got to know more in order to offer counsel in this situation. But we'll even do that. And I'm the pastor of the church. I don't have to know the name, because the objective is to bring about spiritual change. And if I can offer counsel that can help with spiritual change, then objective met. Yeah. Okay. Here's the next question we're going to talk about. And they said it in the email, realness. Okay? Realness. Can you say realness? Okay? Realness. And the question is this: well, how should realness sort of, what about amongst, you know, leaders? What should that look like? And even amongst the congregation? And should there be a distinction? And the way I'm going to interpret the question is that leaders having relationships that are real, that are open with one another. So I answer that first part in this. And there should be an openness that leaders have amongst others, that they can share what is on their heart. They can share about some of the planks that are in their eyes, and they can keep one another accountable. Because if the leaders aren't doing it, then you shouldn't expect and preach and teach that everyone else in the congregation is doing it. You know, we can't have this attitude, that's for the rest of you, we leaders have arrived, we don't need realness, you guys need realness. So they set an example as well, and there may be an appropriate time where even leaders can share about some of the things that they have shared with one another. I'm not talking about details, but the fact that we do discuss these matters. And that could encourage the congregation as well. But then the question comes up, and I think what's being asked is, what about realness, a leader to the congregation? How open should the leader be to the congregation? And even how open should a leader be to someone in the congregation probing somewhat into their life? Is that, even if that's not the question, is that a reasonable question to ask? Yeah, I think it would be. And I think any leader should be open to that probing in their life. They should already have it, but they should be open to someone probing in their life, because it encourages other people to do it as well. And we can't say to everyone else, let your guard down, but we keep ours up. So that's how I feel about realness in leaders, in sharing amongst themselves and then the congregation to them. So there are people that I was sharing with the men that I will invite to ask me questions, but I find what happens is, and I appreciate it, because even people said it to me, well, Pastor, hey, we respect you and believe you and da-da-da-da-da. And I appreciate that, but I'm still flesh and bones. So there have been opportunities I've given people to ask me questions, and maybe they'll ask me once or twice, and they'll stop. And sometimes I think they stop because they think, hey, everything looks to be fine with you. But that doesn't mean that I don't need it and require it as well. So that's a part of it. Now, let me address from another standpoint this issue of realness. How do we kind of reword it in another way? And it is just a genuine openness within the body of Christ so that we can share, whether it be our issues that we're faced with, some of our struggles that we're faced with, but it's also our joys as well. So I don't want to create this picture that says, you know, realness is always about probing and looking for sin. And realness is all about, let me discover where your shortfalls are. And realness is about, let me hear all the logs that are in my life and hear the logs that are in your life. And we sort of have this log session, right? No, it's not that. It's all, you know, just here's some things I'm thinking about. And it's not sinful, but I'm processing this and I'm not sure about this. Can you offer me some counsel? Because sometimes counsel is not so much, it's this, I'll put it this way. It's not so much, you know, being, we'll call it, being saintly versus a sinner. Yeah? It's sometimes it's the best decision and a good decision that I need to make. You get what I'm saying? So I need counsel. What is the best decision in this circumstance? Because even if I chose this decision, it wouldn't be wrong. But I can't right now figure out which one is the best. And I do want the best decision for my family. I want the best decision about this educational choice, this career choice, this relationship, this person that I have an interest in. I want the best decision. So counseling involves this as well. How do I make the best decision for my life? So we shouldn't limit counseling. Again, I want to make sure that it's not, okay, I'm probing to see what I need to uncover that's wrong. Maybe I'm probing to kind of figure out, okay, what's your thinking here? Well, what are your objectives here? What are your motives here? I think this is really the best decision for you to make. So you understand what I mean by that? We get that? Does that make sense? So we need to understand that as well. Let me go to another one here. Okay, this is a sensitive one. And we, last night when we met with the guys, we talked about, focus on two things, which was Proverbs 27:4-5, you know, faithful are the wounds of a friend, deceitful are the kisses of the enemy. And how can we, kind of looking at those words, be faithful, wounds, necessary, good relationships. But we also dove into an area here. What am I doing? creating a new word. Okay. Yeah. And we discussed this. Okay. And perhaps, you know, all of these are related somehow, but in particular here, in here. Okay. This is not outside in the world somewhere. This is not what people outside the church only do. This is within the church. It happens in the church with church people in Bible-believing churches. It absolutely, this is definitely true. Thought life that one may have, fantasies that one may play with in their mind, trying to get a sense of gratification with what they don't touch and what they may not feel and what they may not experience through creating it in their mind. Now, but it's not limited to men. It's not. Women engage in it as well. Obviously, the percentages are not the same, but nonetheless, it happens. And I've seen information that says that it sort of increasingly is happening. And if it's increasingly happening in the world, surely it's happening in the church. That shouldn't be a, it'd be great if I wouldn't, it wouldn't make sense to say that, but it does. So the question is, with men, let's try to think for a moment. With men, if there's apprehension in sharing that maybe this is something that I have struggled with, how much more do you think it's multiplied if it's a woman that is maybe addressing this issue? Do you think it'd be the same, or would it be different or multiplied more or less? What do you think? More. Yeah, even more so. Because it's almost at times, society will almost say for a man, that's sort of accepted. That's a part of your manhood. But if a, even in the world, they might even say that. But in the world, for a woman, even the world might say, that's a little, well, women don't do that. Women don't think that way. Now, we also discuss with the men that God has, in his thinking, designed men a certain way. But what has happened, society has, in our own lusts, have perverted it. Okay? So the question had to do with then how should this be addressed? And here's my thought. In the same way that an environment has to be created for men to be able to discuss it, it has to be created for women as well. So that means that if we have to work hard to create an environment for men to discuss it, perhaps you have to work doubly hard for women to discuss it. Because I would just imagine, let's right now be real about it. If a woman in an environment, you know, asked and said, hey, boy, came to someone, I'm really struggling with that. Like right now, or this has become a part of my life, and maybe it started it, it doesn't matter when it started. And if they said, this is a part of my life, right now, I mean, be honest, don't say it out loud, but in your mind, what would be your first inclination? What would be your first thoughts, perhaps, if a woman confessed that to you? I mean, just think about it. Then you have to ask yourself, is that the response that the Lord would want? And the response that you would want is still, we're here to offer hope. Because see, what happens with people whenever there is sort of an issue in their life that is more shameful, then the tendency is to what? Hide it more, right? And the more a person hides any issue, the less opportunity for them to receive hope. So if they're in an environment where they know, I can't possibly share that, how can I possibly share that? What? No one's going to want anything to do with me. They're going to think this about me. They'll start gossiping about me. I know that they will. They'll share it with someone else, and then other people will find out about it. So I'm going to keep it to myself. And the enemy is like, you can deal with this yourself. You don't really need anyone else. If you possibly shared it with someone else, come on, this is a Bible-believing church. You know they don't tolerate that sort of thing in Bible-believing churches. Which is a lie. It is really just the opposite. I mean, the Bible-believing church, if they've studied the Bible with any consistency and integrity, they should realize that we serve a God of mercy that is giving opportunity. Remember with Cain and Abel? And what God is giving Cain the opportunity right there to repent. When he poses that question about his brother, that was an opportunity to extend the hand of grace. So what we do and what happens with people when it comes to these issues that can be more shameful is that then people go somewhere else or they stay in their closet. And there's certain things that, you know, if you put it in a closet, just the bacteria just grows because it doesn't get any light. And if it doesn't get any light to kill the bacteria, then it festers. So any ministry has to say to itself, okay, how do we create an environment? How will I be? And what you have to put it this way, you have to be the individual that would say, I would be there for that person. Then if we each thought individually that way, then the natural outcome is what? You have a body that thinks that way. But if you think self-righteously about it, then I don't think that honors the Lord. Does that make sense? Question about that? Comment? Point of clarity on what I've said? Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more detail that you can go into, but that's the starting principle for that issue. Okay? And you have to understand, like I said even last night with the guys, that Satan is a master strategist. And part of what he wants to do is to keep people quiet so that they don't receive help. Wow, it is 11 o'clock. I can't believe that. Give me maybe I can have 5 minutes? Yeah, okay. Thanks. Wow. Wow. Okay, let me take okay. This one here. General question. How do we know how much we can share about a situation without gossip being involved? The principle is sort of just basic in the sense that as general as we can be, when it involves a particular person, we should be. Like I said with my wife, sometimes she may come to me with the situation. Here's the situation. Yes, I know it's a woman involved, but I don't need to know all the particulars of it. Let me read the question because it says, when seeking counsel about a situation involving others, how do we know how much you can share about the others involved without gossiping about them? That is, you know a situation, now you're going to someone else to receive counsel about it. And I think that's where we have to learn how to be discerning. First, perhaps the recourse is to go to their leaders. But I don't think, let me make this statement, I don't think the first recourse is to always go to your elder board. That's where if you have a healthy body that is functioning well, particularly you're in a care group, I would say start in your care group. Before you go, though, I would say you say to that person, you know what? I want to help you in this. I want to offer you some counsel, but I think I need to run this by someone. So let them know that that's what you're going to do. Are you comfortable with that? I'm not going to share your name and as few particulars as possible I'll share, but I do need to get some counsel if I'm going to continue counseling you on this area and get their sort of okay on it, and then you take the steps to do that. I think that's what you would have to do in a situation like that. There are a couple more questions, and what I'm going to do for those people is I'm just going to email them back and answer them. But I am going to answer this one, and it talks about that I describe counseling as a way of refocusing our perspectives. What are some practical ways that you stay spiritually focused as you counsel others and yourself. And I'll just make this statement. When counseling other people, part of it is sanctifying. That is, I am sharing things with them, and I'm also benefiting from it myself. And even when I teach, I'm sharing things when I teach, and I'm learning even as I'm teaching. Here's another thing that's important. Like when I pray before I counsel, when I preach, I pray before I counsel. Because there are situations that where I have shared with people, and some of the details that they share with me can be burdensome. Now, the person itself is not a burden to me, but the situation, the details can be burdensome, and it can weigh on you. So I have to pray about that, and that helps me focus. And there are even things that maybe some people have shared with me that the details of it could even be a temptation. And so I have to maintain my focus as well. The other thing that's important when someone is sharing with me and to keep my focus, and I just want to use this word, confidence, that I have to maintain that person's confidence. I never as a pastor are going to share things from the pulpit, even by way of illustration. If I'm going to share an illustration, you know, I'm going to get that person's, if it's something that could be embarrassing. And I may say, this may be beneficial. Now, you're on the other side of it. You have gained victory of it. Would it be okay? I'm not going to share your name, but just to share what happened in your situation. But there's also wisdom in that. Because if something has happened enough that just about everybody knows what happened, then I wouldn't do it. Because even if you just said a person, I talked to a person, everyone knows who you're talking about, and you've given it away. So confidence is very important when you counsel with other people. Now, the other is, time is out. If I didn't answer that question, I'm going to email you back and answer it. And maybe in some other setting, if you get that answer in a care group, you could share it in your care group even, and it might be beneficial. Okay? All right. Let me pray and end our time. Father, thank you for your mercy you've shown us and just your riches towards us, God. Thank you for these words that were shared. I pray that it would be an encouragement. In Jesus' name.